You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts. Landscape construction. It's the sector that's smack bang in the middle of the entire horticultural industry. While the nursery workers propagate the plants, and the designers and landscape architects envision and draw the designs up, landscapers are the ones who get to physically create the built landscape and see it turn from an empty canvas into something truly beautiful. And then they get to leave and let the maintenance operators take care of the ongoing work. But landscape construction is more than just horticulture. There's also a construction element to it that you won't find in any other sector. You need to match your plant knowledge with the ability to construct hard landscape elements like pools, fences, pathways, retaining walls, patios, gazebos, and much more. In this episode, I chat with Rob Wardlaw about what it's really like working in landscape construction. I mean, what it's really like when your boots are on the ground and your hands are in the dirt. He's been in the industry for decades, having run a successful landscape company, and now teaches the next wave of landscapers at TAFE New South Wales. We talk about the realities of working as a landscaper, how to break into the industry and progress your career beyond just management, and we also discuss some of the technical skills that you need to be successful in the industry, including those hard and soft landscaping skills. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks, Daniel.
So, look, to start with, I'd like to get your thoughts on some definitions here because, you know, I think some people use the term landscaper exclusively to refer to landscape construction, but does it also refer to maintenance? What are your thoughts there?
I guess if you were to speak to someone that's solely maintenance, they could say that they were, you know, they were a landscaper, and essentially landscaping, I guess, is sculpting the land and sculpting a garden. But it's, yeah, I guess you could class it as a under the landscaper umbrella, as a horticulturalist and guys that do the maintenance, they would be in that under that umbrella. Landscape construction predominantly builds. It is a green and hard construction field where you're doing all the, you know, the paving and the retaining walls and the decking and the pergolas and all the stuff that sort of builds the skeleton to a new garden. But in as a contractor or someone that's in that landscape construction field, you're doing both. You're doing the green side of thing or the softscapes and as well as the hardscapes. So if you had to pigeonhole a landscaper, then I would say someone that was doing landscape construction would be it. Guys doing maintenance, they don't need a license to do what they do. You can have qualifications, but you generally, well, not generally, you don't need a license to do that sort of work. And I guess if you were to ask someone that's spent money on licensing and insurancing and done the qualifications and has got the experience, whether you could call someone that does garden maintenance a landscaper, they would say, no, not really. Mm-hmm. They haven't earned it. But that probably sounds a bit elitist, but they're two different things under the same umbrella. And if that umbrella had a big landscaping banner on it, then they would come under it. I guess if you were to try and pigeonhole a landscaper, that would be doing landscape construction, the building as well as the softscapes. But guys that have got successful businesses in landscape construction also do maintenance. You know, they build these fantastic gardens and spend a lot of time and effort doing it and getting it perfect. Those guys are willing to they've got a maintenance side to their business, so they'll go out and they'll offer the client a maintenance program, and often that'll happen and the client will accept that and say, well, you built it, you know it, you can look after it and I'll pay you to look after it. So then they are doing the garden maintenance essentially, but they built it, so they are the landscaper. But if you're solely doing maintenance and you haven't got a license or a qualification to do construction, it's grey, Dan. And it's controversial.
Yes, so, that's why I asked.
And you're going to get different opinions on that. Mine is obviously just one. I spent, a lot of years owning my own landscape construction business, and I did maintenance as well. I offered maintenance, the garden maintenance as part of what I did. What I did find is that the guys I had working for me, predominantly the guys you get are young guys. Like it is a young guy's game because it's hard. It's physically tough. And the guys that are doing it, and girls, like the girls are fantastic. So the guys that are doing it just want to build stuff,
Right.
The majority of they want to get their hands in. They want to get a hammer, or they want to get a trowel in their hand and construct stuff and build stuff. And then when you say, go out and, we've got a day here, I want you to go and do all this garden maintenance, which is in mowing the lawns and weed right. treatment and pest and disease treatment, they say. Oh,
it's beneath them.
Yeah. Well, it's not, they don't have an interest in it.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not that it's beneath them, but it's just not their passion.
It's not their passion, no.
They don't want to turn up to the same site every couple of weeks and do it again. They want to get the job done, move on to greener pastures.
That's right. I actually found that a struggle with my business is to get guys that were keen to do it. And if they're, it's like anything, if you're keen to do something, you'll do a good job. But if you're not keen to do something, you sort of do it half-heartedly and the results show. And I did find that I have experienced that. With a lot of my guys that I had do garden maintenance, they weren't interested. And we ended up having to shut that side down because it became too hard, too much of a hassle to get people to do it and to do it well. And also it was, you're taking people away from the construction side of things, which was the majority of our work. So we were taking guys away from that. So one day you might have five or six guys on site, and the next day you'll have three guys on site getting half the amount of work done. So although it's still, profit and you still make money from garden maintenance, I found it too much of a juggle for me I had a business. So, I tried finding guys that were interested in doing garden maintenance, but I struggled with that as well. But there's plenty out there doing it. You see trucks and utes driving around all the time now with horticulturist or garden maintenance specialties on it. So it is a growing field. But to answer your question, Dan, it's a grey area, and I don't think you're going to get a black and white answer.
So I think we can probably both agree that landscape designers wouldn't be able to call themselves a landscaper. Like, you're a landscape designer, not necessarily a landscaper. I think of landscapers as certainly being on the tools, and I do actually agree with you. Whenever I say landscaper, I'm specifically talking about construction.
Yes, yes, yeah. I'm agreeing with you there. I also have my qualification in landscape design. You cannot call a landscape designer a landscaper. Mm. I don't know whether they'd be insulted or I do both, so I'm not. I wouldn't be insulted. But
the purpose isn't to insult anybody. The purpose is just to get our terms right, because if no one's told you what these terms mean, you might be confused. Like, they may not even bring that up in your workplace or at TAFE. That might be something that's just sort of intuitive and basic, and people might be wondering.
Yeah, look, landscape designers. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into all qualifications that you do.
Absolutely. Even I'm a maintenance person, and I got to say, a lot of work goes into that. But I can see your frustration as a construction person, because I bet all the time you've seen your gardens sort of go south due to maintenance crew, would you say?
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of it was the, I mean, I've had it happen with the maintenance. When I had a maintenance program, I had guys that weren't interested and it did go south.
And even on under your watch?
Under my
watch. So it wasn't even another company?
It didn't go far south. No. But there were, I was getting callbacks. So it had to, I had to sort that out. You know, we had to remedy that. But in the end, Dan, what we ended up doing was passing the work on to guys that were solely doing maintenance. And it worked out better because the guys doing maintenance weren't qualified to do some of the stuff that they were being asked to do, structural stuff. So we ended up doing a lot of work for guys that were just doing the maintenance.
And how did you find that maintenance crew? Like, was that a networking thing or online?
It was solely a networking thing. I knew because, I mean, where I worked and where I live, it's not a massive area. There's a lot of work here, but it's not a huge area. Geographically, we're not far from Sydney, but we're sort of separated by the Royal National Park. We've got a fairly intense but small area, and a lot of people commute to Sydney, so there's a bit of wealth around the area, so there's a lot of work. Right. But because geographically it's a small area, you do mingle with a lot of people in the industry in this area. And I think if you didn't know how to communicate and you didn't know how to talk to people or have the confidence to say good day to someone else that was doing a landscaping job three doors up the road, you're sort of missing out on opportunities, but also network opportunities. And having a good network's important in a small area. It's really important. It's not only for work, but you know, sounding boards and just finding out new stuff that people know that you don't. And I just find that's an important side of. And I guess you could say any business or any industry.
Mm, that's right. Specifically for me, like especially for me, like in what I'm doing, but even when I was in maintenance, just as a maintenance operator, going to industry events and stuff like that. Actually, I was already doing the podcast by that point. That was really the catalyst for me going to events and really focusing on networking. But I just always think like you never know where your next opportunities come from. And just have a chat with people with no expectations, you know, just be, oh, what are you up to today? I can see you're mowing next door. So what are you doing? We're here constructing. What are you doing there mowing?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it's all about. And it's not hard to talk. It's pretty much, it's communication.
For me, it's easy. I know for a lot of people it is tricky. And I don't know if it's a muscle thing or probably a bit of nature in there as well in terms of like your innate personality. Maybe some people are more extroverted, but.
Yeah. Well, it would come down to your personality. I found with my, this is not a lot to do with networking, but communication. People love to have a chat. I mean, the people you work for, they love to have a chat and they love to sit down and just talk, not just about the work you're doing, but anything. And especially older people like we, and you know this, Dan, when you do maintenance, you're often doing it for people that aren't able to do it anymore. And they loved doing it previously, but they aren't able to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And often these are the people that, you know, it's great to talk to and you learn a lot from them. And I said to my guys, I said, whenever you get offered a cup of tea at someone's place, take it. I said, sit down because they want you to do it. And, you know, people love to have a chat. And I didn't mind paying for guys to sit down and have a half-hour chat with someone and a cup of tea. I'm more than happy to do that.
It's probably easier for you in construction than in maintenance because time frames are pretty locked on in maintenance. Like you've got 33 minutes to do this job and not a second longer.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, we were dictated by the clock quite a bit. But I still think that, you know, I made time, and if they had to go into overtime, I didn't mind if they sat down. And we used to do work for people that had lost partners and were unable to care for their own place but wanted to stay there. And they were, you know, I guess some of them were a little bit lonely and mm-hmm. liked people coming around to the house and having a chat. And I could talk underwater with a mouthful of marbles, and I enjoyed having a chat to these people. And the stuff you hear, the stories I've got, in fact, they're great. And, mm-hmm. and like I said before, the guys you employ are often young guys, and for the information and knowledge to be passed on for someone that's, you know, generations above them, it's, you know, they might learn something. So I was more than happy to cop the cost for them to stop and have a chat and a yarn to someone to keep them happy, but also for themselves. I think it's, you know.
I've got to applaud that. That's bloody awesome. Yeah, not many bosses will do that. Well, I guess I wouldn't say not many bosses. I just think because my experience in maintenance is that, you know, we had a few special clients, I guess, throughout my career. I wouldn't say that I would stop for everyone, but not everyone would ask, just thinking back. Hmm. Anyone who would ask, I think I actually would stop, but I'd take my lunch break, I guess.
Yeah.
Just put myself on a break. But even still, like, yeah, I remember some of the clients we had, like Betty Ann and Pam, some of the great older ladies who had lost their partners but just were down for a chat and had exactly what you're saying, bountiful plant knowledge, and I learned a lot from those conversations.
Yeah. Like you say, it's not every client that it happens to, but there's one or two that just look forward to you being there and offer you a cup of tea. And, I mean, if you turn them down, and be a bit rude.
It feels wrong, doesn't it?
It's not right. So we had really good relationships with clients, and that's one of the things I miss because I'm at TAFE now. That's one of the things I miss about having a business is talking to clients. Not all clients are fantastic either, but the good ones, it was great just to sit down and have a chat with them, and I still bump into them. I bumped into a guy I did work for. We did a landscape job for going back 12 years, I reckon. Mm. And I bumped into him the other day, and we got chatting. We were talking for an hour, and you know, it was really good to see where people have, what they've done since then, and to catch up. And it just, I guess it's, if you can bump into someone down the track, I think it's a good sign that you had a good relationship when you were working for them. And it was nice to see people that you did jobs for and did work for and had a relationship with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, it's that networking thing again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I guess it's, you know, and, you know, I mean, my wife, she's in a corporate world, and her interpretation of networking's, I mean, I guess it's all the same. It's industry, people in the same industry mingling and talking and passing on information and stuff. But I mean, her networking's on a different scale to the networking that I generally did. But it's all the same thing, you know. It's the passing on of information and
your network,
gaining relationships with people, yeah, colleagues in your industry,
and maintaining those relationships too. Because it's one thing to build a relationship, but you've also got to keep it going. Like, I actually, you know, what you said just then about you had a client and then you come back 10 years later and you see him. Well, that actually is an example of you didn't even maintain that you didn't put any effort into maintaining that relationship, and then it was still there all that time later.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And I mean, this guy was fantastic. I mean, he was different, but he was, him and his wife, they were beautiful people.
Mm.
And
I like the different people.
Yeah, same. but we had a great relationship, and just to bump into the other day, I had to look twice because I was in a shop and he walked in. I thought, I know that guy. And he said the same thing. He said, I know that guy. I said, oh, Mike. He said, yeah. It was great. So they've moved away from the house that we spent a lot of time on. So they've moved to downsized into four walls and a roof, pretty much. No garden.
Oh, well, hopefully you helped him get a good price for it.
Yeah, well, he was happy. He was smiling when he was talking to me. So, you know, I didn't. We didn't take value from their property. Otherwise, he'd be hunting me down, I guess. But no, it's good. You know, I think relationships are something to be maintained, and I guess that's related. That's a networking thing. And even yesterday, I was down at Bunnings, if I can say Bunnings, big green shop.
You can. Yeah, big green shed as well, also accept.
I ran into a mate who's he's been in the industry and landscape construction, and I've known him for quite a long time now, and it's just nice to bump into people and that you had relationships with before. I mean, I remember the day I got the call from a guy at TAFE and said, would you be interested in teaching landscape construction? Oh. And I knew him, and he said, yeah. And so I had to go through the whole process. I went through the process to get into TAFE. And
you got your TAE?
Oh, mate, the TAE. That's a beast of a thing.
I'm staring in the barrel of that one.
Are you really?
I'll be doing it myself.
God.
If I could have any space on my plate, probably have to take some other things off first. But
yeah,
it does look like a pretty cool job teaching at TAFE.
Oh, it took me a bit to get used to. I guess the biggest thing was coming from private industry into government. You know, when you had your own business, or even guys at working for someone in a private sector. If you want something and you get it done, or if you want something done, you get it done. And if you need something, you go and get it, or your boss gets it, and stuff happens pretty quick. And I've found working for TAFE, things don't happen as quick. It's a bigger machine, a lot of cogs turning. So if you want something, it's got to go through a bit of a system. But, you know, I guess I probably shouldn't have started with the negatives of working for an organisation. I think it was probably one of the best decisions I've made in my life. I did do landscape design as part of an exit strategy. I had to get off the tools. And I enjoyed that. I actually I wished I had done it earlier, because I found having that skill to offer a drawing with a quote was a big thing. Being able to show a client what they're getting rather than a list of what they're getting in words is a winner.
What do they say? Pictures worth 1,000 words.
They do, and it is true. So, I mean that qualifies the cost of getting. It was a diploma. It wasn't a degree.
Did you get a lot of recognized learning?
Yeah, RPL. I got a few. I probably got, I think, 4 or 5 units RPL. But such
that's good.
Yeah.
What is it? 10 units in the diploma.
I think it was 11 when I did it. I think it's gone up. I think there may even be 14 or 15 now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think. So that was
so long ago. I did my diploma of horticulture, but I forget it all now.
Well, if you don't use it, you lose it, Dan. So,
well, I remember the facts because I'm constantly talking about them like I'm in that world, but I forget how many units there were and, you know, what the units were called. I just remember the facts. And you're probably right. I probably lost a good 33% of what I learned.
Yeah, but, you don't use everything you've learned from doing your diploma. And I guess it's like school and you know, when you're doing maths at school and algebra. I mean, how many times have you used algebra since school? So
no, but I bet as a landscape construction professional, you do use a lot of the math, probably more simple math.
Yes, you use a lot of maths. And there's the basics, you know, the volume, perimeter, area. It's big. And I made a point of when I started teaching is to push maths. And I do maths exercises for my classes every morning. Basics. It's just the basic maths that you need.
How to separate shapes of garden beds so that they're more easy to measure.
To quantify and measure, definitely. I enjoy it, though. I probably enjoy maths better more now than I did when I was at school for some I don't know why.
Because you got something you can attach to it. It's real to you. Whereas when you're just doing how many ice creams does Mary have?
Well, this is it.
You know, Sally licks too.
Yeah, this is it. I do enjoy, and I enjoy helping my kids out with their maths, although their maths is going back to the maths I was doing at school and some of the stuff I just
walk away. The algebra stuff.
Yeah. Okay. It's crazy. Yeah. It's great. It's a really good field. I know you spoke to Dave Little the other day about in the turf industry, and their industry's got something different to our industry as far as network is concerned. They are very well networked, the turf industry, and quite a cohesive bunch. And I find the landscape construction, you've got a lot of, even though there's communication, you've got a lot of guys doing their own thing. So small companies just, you know, doing the same thing as each other but doing it individually. And it's not like an association. Well, obviously you've got the
two hands. Shout out to Landscaping Victoria and even the Australian Institute of Horticulture will take yours.
Yes. I think, you know, if the industry could work on anything, it would be cohesion and trying to get smaller guys together. I know we've got statewide associations.
I know a lot of landscapers do the whole NGI thing as well in their own state, and we do have a lot. I said the AIH then, but we have a lot. I'm a council member for the AIH, and a lot of us are landscapers.
Yes, yeah. I think
because you've got to have that plant knowledge.
Well, this is it. I mean, that's what makes a good landscaper. If you're solely hardscapes, you're
a builder.
You're a builder. but you're not even a builder. I don't know where you sit because you're not. You cannot build a habitable structure under our license. So you cannot build a house. You can build
a retaining wall.
Retaining walls and decks, pergolas. But if what makes you a landscaper is being able to do both, you know, being able to and having a sound knowledge of plants, soils. That's what differs landscapers from builders.
Here we have those two sides to the job again. So we've got the soft or the green landscaping and then the hard landscaping. So you're really between those two worlds.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And there are guys that just do hard stuff. They just, you know, that's all they do is hard landscapes. And that's fine. I mean, those guys are doing well. And again, like I said earlier, with the maintenance, I used to pass that on. That's what those guys are doing. They'll pass on the green side of the job to a horticulturalist and have it done.
So do you think that there is a place for a dedicated horticulturist, amenity horticulturist, diploma of horticulture or Cert 3 of horticulture within a landscape construction business, or do they really need to start getting some of those construction qualifications as well?
No, not at all. I definitely think there's a place for a horticulturalist in a landscaping. I think that's essential. I think if you've got to have someone, if you want to be a landscaper, you need to know plants. And if you don't know plants, you've got to have someone beside you that does know plants. I think it's a massive feather in the cap of a company or a little business to have someone that is strong with the softscapes.
Absolutely agree. And I sort of mentioned before, you know, construction crews are probably shaking their heads at some of the work that maintenance crews do. But at least in maintenance, well, not even in maintenance, but a good horticulturist can walk up and have a look at a tree and be like, well, that was buried too deep. It doesn't stand a chance. And that's not down to the designer. That's down to the construction crew.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see it a lot.
That's one of the big ones.
Yeah, you do. You do see it a lot. And I think as an industry, that's where we could improve. And I know I do see it a lot at TAFE. And again, going back to the demographic of the, you know, the students, that the majority of kids we get in are young guys that are just want to build stuff. You know, they just want to construct and build and do that sort of stuff. That's what they enjoy doing, working with their hands. And when it comes to the green side of stuff, you sort of, a lot of them lose a bit of interest, which is a little bit of a shame. I mean, as you know, there's quite a bit of a science involved with horticulture and soils. It's
applied science.
Yeah. Yes. So
it's pretty hectic when you get into it.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And I think that's probably where the industry could pick up a bit on
is a plant knowledge.
Yeah, and probably enforce it a little bit with certificates on having to know more about plants than we currently do.
Hmm. Interesting. But that would make it a massive qualification there because you've got so much to learn already.
Yeah. I know. There is a bit there.
There's a little bit, isn't there, with the construction side alone.
Yeah. The construction side, I mean, we've just had a new certificate rolled out this year. So it's an upgrade on the old version. And we've got two more units on top of the 15 we had, you know, and the majority of our units, like I'd probably say 60 to 70% of our units are hardscape units, you know, the building where, you know, this is where a lot of your regulation and codes come into it, is knowing all that stuff and the hardscapes is definitely the majority of what we teach guys. But like you say, if we were to try and even it out and have them as competent in softscapes as hardscapes, the certificate becomes huge. You'd have to tack another year on, you know, and that wouldn't make many people happy. So
work next to a horticulturist, get your crew to listen to the Plants Grow Here podcast.
Yep.
Just by hook or by crook, get that plant knowledge.
Yeah, I'll tell you also, Dan, it's like I said with myself and Mass, I've sort of grown a deeper interest in plants as I've got a bit older, I guess, but just through working industry, just, you know, wanting to know. I did start off in horticulture first before, you know, well before landscape construction. I grew up on a farm. So horticulture was just part of that, the environment I grew up in. So my mum had a nursery as well. So I was surrounded by it from a very young age. But even though I was surrounded by it, I still, as a young male, I still had more of an interest in building than I did with plants. But I find my want and want to learn about plants is coming on later in life. So maybe that's where you tap into the horticulturalists that for guys that are predominantly doing landscape construction to the hardscapes, is to look for the more mature guy and girl.
Because they've seen it all.
That have seen it all and have developed more of an interest in plants at a later stage, like myself, because I've, you know, I do have an interest in it now, and I'm starting to try and practice a bit of bonsai here at home.
Cool. How's that going?
I think it's going okay, Dan.
Takes a long time, though, I guess.
Takes a long, long time. But when I look at some of the stuff, you know, I've got a friend who does it as well, and when I look at some of her stuff, I think, God, you know, it looks so good. And then you jump onto YouTube and you have a look at the stuff, some of the stuff that's, you think you're so far away from even being near anything that they do. So, you know, I enjoy it now. I guess it's a maturity thing and an age thing, but you know, you change as you grow, as I'm sure most people will. But yeah, my interest in plants has developed later rather than earlier.
So you said, look, you grew up just immersed in horticulture, you know, that was around you. It was easy for you. Like you sort of already saw the pathway. But I'm imagining someone listening to this right now, maybe they're in school, maybe they're in a TAFE or uni course that they don't like, or maybe they're midway through their career and looking for a change. Can you describe some of the ways to break into this sector? Like is there just one way? Like is it just the apprenticeship, or are there other ways as well to break into it?
The apprenticeship will get you a qualification. And if you have intentions of going out and starting your own business, the qualification is what you'll need. But having said that, I mean, you could start work for someone and put yourself through TAFE as a mainstream student. And, you know, you learn a lot of the theory at TAFE and a lot of the practical stuff as well, but on the job, whether you're working casually or whatever, you hone those skills. To get into the, like we get quite a broad range of people that come into TAFE. Like I said, majority are young, but you do get we've got chefs, people that were in, that quite a few chefs actually seem to jump over later on and start working in the industry and want their qualification. It's probably one of those fields where people want to work in something they're interested in. They've had a life of doing a job that they are, you know, may have been good at the start, but are sick of and want to do something that's more fulfilling. They may have worked inside their whole life and want to start working outside in the environment. To get into it, I guess you could start by doing your own thing, you know, around your own garden, just to get a feel for it, and then start approaching guys that have got business saying, can I do some, you know, can I do some casual work? Most guys would be more than happy to do that, and if you explain to them why, then I would say that most people would be more than happy for you to come on board and help out. And if you were dead set keen on getting your qualification, then you would look at TAFE and say, well, you know, I'm really enjoying working outside and in the horticultural space, maybe I will go to TAFE and get my qualification. But, I mean, you can start with a certificate one or two and three. So you can start, you know, with small courses, which is quite handy for a lot of people. You don't have to go and commit to a 3 or 4 year apprenticeship to start with. So there's, you know, you do like a taster unit or two and see how you like it, and if it feeds the beast, well, you just keep going. We do get a reasonably diverse range of people come over to start studying landscape construction, and it's good, it's great, because they want to learn, a lot of them. It's great just to have that contrast in background. And the chefs are good, because at the end of the year we generally have a barbecue, but that's straight on it.
They probably know like the good fruits to grow together and, you know, what tastes good with what, you know,
yeah,
chilies and basil together, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's, but having, you know, that if you're going down the food side of thing, that's another kettle of fish altogether. And
totally.
And the interest in that sort of thing and is great. It's great to see. We have at work, we have our own little citrus patch and, I don't think we've got a bush tucker area. We've got I don't think we have got a bush tucker area, but I know we've got a citrus area, but it's something we could work on because a lot of people now are into indigenous plantings mm-hmm. and endemic to the area plantings and bush foods.
Totally. They're not very economical in a lot of ways, so we don't really get to eat them that often. So if you can actually plant them and help the students or help your workforce actually experience that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, trying to get students interested and to look outside the box and to be on the forefront of where the industry is going, I think is one of those things. Mm. I think, you know, if you look at trends, having your garden planted out into a super sustainable garden that's endemic to the area that includes bush foods, it's you know, that
I can just see Costa Georgiadis' mouth salivating right now as we talk.
Oh, he's all over it. He loves that stuff. So, it's a growing trend, that one, and I think it's fantastic. It's easy to get into a bit of a rut with your own trend or your own style, I guess, with landscaping, and you're doing pumping out the same stuff, the same plants.
That's when passion dies, isn't it?
It's when you get sick of it. So looking outside the box and pushing and trying new stuff is, you know, it's how things are made. It's how you progress, I guess. I like to, when I teach my guys, it's just to start, you know, giving them tasters and pushing them, and well, not pushing them, but exposing them to different ideas. I discovered Paul Stamets,
mushroom guy.
The mushroom guy last year, and I was watching his fantastic fungi thing and I thought it was fantastic. Not all of it. I thought some of it was a bit way out, but well, not way out.
Do you think he's trying to reach a bit too much?
It was almost advertising, I guess, towards the end. I think he was pushing a bit too hard. But as far as I wanted to show the students this video, and I did. But I purely wanted to show them simply because I was intrigued about the relationship mycelium has with plants in the soil. Mm. And, you know, if I could show the students that, and two of them spiked an interest in soils or mycelium, I thought, you know, that's great.
And the others might be inspired by another little tidbit.
That's
your job as a teacher.
Yeah, yeah. So it is, yeah, it is. But if you can expose kids or students to that sort of thing, and you get a few that are interested, they're the guys that go on and you know, start learning in that area and they are, you know, breaking ground. They eventually do break ground and come up with something or start a new trend or branch off into something that's completely different because of an exposure they had earlier on in their life. So
that's so me too. Like some of the smallest conversations, the shortest conversations or stuff that other people might forget have been life-changing for me. Like just that little tidbit. Like I remember when I first heard about podcasting, Like, I just kept learning about it and learning about it for years until I finally started mine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a little crossroad. It's like a mini, it's a minute crossroad that has a big effect, you know, it's in your life. You take a completely different direction because of what seemingly is an insignificant crossroad, but turns out to be massive. So,
well, while we're on that note, can you tell us some of the like opportunities for progression? Like when I think about maintenance, I sort of think about the progression pretty much just being working at a bigger firm and then sort of working your way up into management or tendering or something like that. Mm. Like, is that the same in landscape construction or is there something else going on?
Landscape construction it's an industry where you become a bit of a jack of all trades. You do a broad range you've got a broad range of skills, and you know, having such a broad range of skills doesn't allow you to sort of specialize if you want to stick to that.
Unless you do like rooftop gardens or something like that. That's but even right. then, there's a lot of skills.
But yeah, that's a thing on its. That's huge. That thing, and you could go down that line. You could go down that channel.
Or native gardens.
Native gardens, sensory gardens, veggie gardens, vertical gardens. There's so many avenues. But landscape construction, you've also got all the hardscapes. So you could, if you want to be a bricklayer, you could go down that road. Just pay these guys that just do paving.
Parks, like playgrounds.
That's it. Landscape design. I mean, like, you know, you could go down, that line. You sort of, obviously you get the RPL with your training, but you've already got a lot of the information under your belt before you start. So it's a really good avenue. But like I said, exposing these kids to different things, so they could go down the agronomy line and start being looking at soils and soil health and regenerational work. So
arboriculture, like, I mean, imagine having trees and construction in your tool belt. Like, what a dangerous character that is.
Oh, be bulletproof. So it's such a broad industry, a massive array of skills. You don't really master any of them, but if you wanted to specialize, that there's numerous doors you could open to go through. And you know, I've had guys that I've seen out and about, the students, past students, that, you know, guys that go down into the pool industry, pool fencing, just running pool fencing business. What else? Project management, you know, that sort of stuff. If they've been a foreman or a leading hand on site, they've got those management skills. They can go anywhere. So.
Yeah, especially in those big companies, like they're hiring for managers, they're hiring for people to just do quotes and tenders. Like that could be just your job, doing quotes and tenders.
I was just talking about that the other day, because we've got a unit that we're learning that is all about costing projects. And we're saying that there's people that are just solely paid to quantify and cost projects.
And they probably have a career, you know, a previous history in landscape construction if they're quoting for landscape construction jobs.
That's right. Yeah, and that's right. And I guess landscaping does give you that background underpinning knowledge, you know. If you were to go down these lines, whichever direction you travel, if you were to specialise in one thing or another, you've always got that underpinning knowledge of landscaping and the, you know, the foundation of what you're doing. So it's a great skill. It's a great industry to work in that regards, to have that rounded skill base and rounded knowledge. But again, going back to what we said earlier, if you're good at plants as well, then you've got it all. You know, if you've got the construction and the sound knowledge of plants, you've got it all, and you can go a lot of places.
So we talked about, you know, legislation preventing just anybody from doing the construction side of things, but I just wanted to emphasize that in terms of the softscaping, like your mulch, your trees and stuff like that, there's plenty of that there for a horticulturist, right?
Legislation.
Oh, I mean, you don't need a special license to push the mulch or to plant a tree. You do. Or we should have a special license for planting trees, considering the time frames that they live for, but we don't. But certainly for construction, you know, that is there's a barrier there. You literally have to have that construction qualification before you can even start doing that, right? Or can you do it under supervision?
No, you can work under someone else's license. This is generally your boss. Okay. So, if you're working under someone, if someone has ownership of a project, they're carrying the license and you're working under them. So they are responsible for what you do.
I see. So that's how you can have laborers on site too.
Yeah. So the buck stops with you as far as your license goes. Now, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure, well, you can quote me.
I'm going to.
$5,000 is the $5,000 worth of work is the maximum you can go up to before you need a license.
Wow. So it's about the monetary value, not necessarily about the safety of the structure.
Yeah, so you can't get a lot for $5,000 structurally. Mm. But $5,000 is the cutoff for when you need a license. I'm pretty sure that's right. Maybe I should Google that. Yeah, $5,000, Dan. So that's residential. Okay, and this is New South Wales Fair Trading. So you must have a license before you do any residential building work in New South Wales, including structural landscaping, valued more than $5,000 in labour and materials. So, yeah, I mean, if to get your license, you need your certificate, your qualification.
Is that a Cert 3 or a Cert 4, or how high does that go?
Certificate 3. Yep. So you can do a certificate 3 and have your license, but without it, you can't do work under over $5,000.
Mm.
So that's a cost. That's labour, materials. That's the project cost.
Mm. So you're just got to do cashies then? No, just joking.
Well, we're turning into a card economy, so do it while you can, I guess, before it's gone. Well, no, can't do cashies. Mm.
No, you can't do cashies. There are stories of people who've tried, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
And it doesn't always go well.
No, well, I mean, there's plenty of clients that will ask you to do a cash job.
And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you provide an invoice, right?
Yeah, yes. So it's purely to remove the GST from it. Yeah. It's not a legal act. I don't believe.
No, it's certainly not. I know that for a fact. Accepting jobs for cash is certainly not legal.
So
without providing an invoice and going through the proper channels with the accountant, etc.
That's right. So, but I guess having that cutoff, that $5,000 cutoff, it keeps, you know, it keeps a standard of work there. Because the guys that do work over $5,000 have got the qualification, the licensing, and having the licensing also protects the client. So,
yes, not just the business, it also protects the client.
No, yeah. So it's there for quality assurance for the client. So, yeah, I mean that's a good thing. Having said that, there are a lot of guys that still do a lot of work without licensing, I guess, and it's not as heavily regulated as it probably should be. I've only been asked a handful of times for my license in the years that I've been working in the industry.
Right. By clients doing their due diligence.
Yes, it was that and commercial work. So I didn't do a great deal of commercial work, but the commercial work I did, you obviously had to show your license, and you need your license also for your builder's insurance. So work over $21,000, you needed builder's insurance. So to get builder's insurance, you needed to provide your license details, public liability insurance, I think even workers' compensation. There was quite a bit you had to provide before you went into that next bracket, into your to work over to 21,000 to get your builder's insurance.
So. Yeah, in maintenance, I can certainly say with regards to the insurance and stuff, I've only ever worked for pretty good companies, but I've seen a lot of other companies out there, and there's a lot of she'll be right going on in terms of you know, insurance and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's generally, you know, I mean, it's insurance, you only need it when you need it.
I wasted money on insurance. Yeah, but
it's wasted money until you need it. And I remember forking out a lot of money for income protection when I had a business, and a lot of times I thought, why have I got this? You know, you never use it until you need it. So, it's a love-hate relationship, I guess. Insurances. But if you, I mean, just as someone that's going to, that has an interest in breaking into or starting, you know, to work in the horticulture and or landscaping field, you know now that you don't need to be licensed to go out and do some small jobs just to see if you like it, or just to do a little bit, you know. I mean, there's people that like working outside that don't have much of a yard themselves, and, you know, they may be working part-time somewhere else and decide, well, I might go and do some garden maintenance or mow some lawns and you know, they don't need the qualifications to be able to do that. But if they want to extend it into a more specialised or you know, advanced field, then their licensing is qualifications is the next step.
I do find that maintenance is often the entryway into a lot of these jobs.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of landscape companies have started from maintenance. You know,
right?
Yeah. They've started from guys that have been working for someone and want to go out on their own. So they just get themselves a lawnmower and a whippersnipper and just start doing some lawns, and then they'll start doing some plant maintenance, and, you know, building on that, and it all of a sudden snowballs into a beast. So it is a great entry. Garden maintenance is a great way to get into the business and the industry. But there's so much to learn, as you know. There is so much to learn, and no one will ever know it all. But it's a massive field.
Yeah, I mean, my generation, I've got it too. We're all instant gratification. You know, we want to be the biggest and the best yesterday. We don't really want to have to go through it. But over time, you realize that it is really about taking these small steps. It's about taking those small decisions, about taking that fork in the road like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. And keeping your eyes open, listening, looking, you know. That's where passion is driven from, you know, to keep your eyes open and to look for stuff. And if you're interested in something, explore it, and you might end up loving it. And, you know, and then it could take you places you never thought you'd end up. So,
well said. Yeah, can you paint us a picture of like where this can lead? Like, let's say someone who has the natural gifts and they really apply themselves, what can they achieve?
You could go as far as you wanted to go. I mean, there is work involved, of course. There's work involved in getting anywhere. But if you had your heart set on the industry, you could end up, you know, talking on boards in front of huge crowds, or advising horticultural team in botanical gardens. You know, you could. The more knowledge is power, essentially. So the more you know, the higher your value. So if the world's, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but the world is your oyster. But you've got to chase it a little bit, well, a great deal. I'd say if you've got a passion for something, just go with it, run with it. I didn't ever think I'd be a teacher, but here I am being a teacher. And I was a rat bag at school.
They make the best teachers, though. Rat bags make the best teachers. I had a few teachers in high school that had that bit of rat bag in them, and they were always my favorite because they were the ones who didn't mind discussion as long as it was about the topic.
Yeah.
They were the ones who didn't mind if my shirt wasn't perfectly tucked in.
Because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, it probably mattered to some people, but it certainly didn't matter to me. And that's why I resonated in those classrooms, because they got it.
Yeah. I guess, you know, now seeing kids and you know, young adults at the doorway of the industry, I find getting them into discussion, you know, whether it's about plants, or whether it's about decking timbers, or whether about retaining wall products, having that full class discussion is fantastic, because you know that they're communicating on in the discussion that there's an interest there. They've taken an interest because they've got something to talk about. So the interest is there. So engaging with these students in fields that they're interested in is fantastic to see, because you know that they do have an interest in the industry and they do have an interest in different aspects of the industry. And from that, you can see guys that have got, you know, a passion in certain aspects or certain fields of the industry. So, and you do see some, there are a few that you do see some that have a passion in plants.
Yeah, I put myself in that category. Even though I'm not in landscape construction, I very much think of myself as a plant person.
Yeah. I think having that, I think there's a lot of value tied with that. I think because there is a lot of, like I said before, there's the lot of kids that are so interested in building and creating. The passion isn't there for plants for the majority yet, but then you see, you know, you might get 10% or 8% of the class that have this passion of plants. And, you know, when you start talking about photosynthesis, their eyes don't glaze over. They're completely
light up,
aware, and are listening to everything you say. And if anything, yeah, that's cool. You know, that's, I know where you're going. So I think it's, because landscape industry needs people that are solid with plants and strong with plants, that 10% of the class are going to be valuable. You know, they're going to be, you know, a sought after, because they have that sound and strong plant knowledge. I think it's essential. I think to be a good all round landscaper, you need both. I think having plant knowledge is pretty important.
Totally agree, especially when you're putting them in and then the maintenance crew can only do so much with what you've done for us.
Well, this is the thing, you know, and as you know, plants aren't cheap. They're not cheap at all.
No. Particularly trees.
Particularly trees and advanced stuff. If you put them in wrong or if they, you know, and they're not reaching potential or they die, it's not a good look. I mean, you can do the best job. You can do the best job you can on building the hard features of a landscape. You can build a beautiful wall. You can put awesome stonework, pave everything that, you know, and have a beautiful looking hardscape. But if you mess up the plants, the whole job's ruined. You know, you've done yourself a bit of an injustice on not having that knowledge or ruining the plant side of it.
It's such a basic thing, planting to the correct depth, but I think what happens is that the place looks awesome when the construction crew leave and they never realize what happened, and so they're making this mistake at every job they go to. They're consistently planting too deeply.
Yeah.
And for such a simple little fix, just show the root flare.
Yeah. We had we've been doing quite a bit of stuff with work with public schools in the area and
we'll do TAFE or your company, sorry?
TAFE, yeah. So we'll do a design for a school, and then it's really good for us because they'll pay for all the materials and they'll want a project done, so they'll pay for the materials and we'll go in and tie in units, learning outcomes, and get the job done. And we recently did one a couple of months ago and we had to do a plant out. And because it was a school, we pushed the budget to allow us to use the biggest size pot we could, because kids are animals and they'll squash everything. So we tried to make the plants as big as we could to sort of block areas off so they weren't running straight through and squashing little, you know, 4-inch size pot plants. And the unit involved was, you had to know how to plant a plant and the correct depth, just digging the hole properly was huge, you know, knowing what soil you're dealing with when you're digging that hole. So if it's clay, you've got to bust it up and maybe add some gypsum and break up that soil around it so the roots can penetrate into it. And like you say, not putting that plant in too deep or having it, you know, that's root ball sticking halfway out of the ground. This is essential stuff for a plant to reach its optimal potential. And it was, you know, it was good too to see them do that and to watch them do that properly. And watering as well, you know.
Well, that's another one. Watering the plants in is very much when construction, but then, and I guess setting up the irrigation too, but then as a maintenance crew, I'm the one who's there checking the water, you know, 6 months after you guys have left.
Yeah, the watering system. So that's something that I think is another field altogether is irrigation and water management.
Yeah. Didn't even mention that.
No, but
there's probably a lot we haven't to.
There's a lot to talk about.
There is. We're already an hour and 9 minutes in, and I'm actually going to skip a few of our questions, if you don't mind, because I think we've sort of taken a different route.
That's fine, mate.
Three more for you.
Yep. Like I was saying, irrigation is another big thing. Especially, I mean, we've just come out of, well, we're coming out of the La Nina weather pattern where we've had bucket loads of water over the last few years. But again, we're about to go into the El Nino pattern where we're going to be in drought again, potentially. So
We love a good drought.
Yeah, yeah, everyone does. But we'll be back into water restrictions. So, you know, irrigation, I mean, a lot of it comes down to plant selection as well, yeah. Choosing the right plant for the right area and right conditions.
And then your soil too.
Water storage, water harvesting and irrigation and even grey water. That's something that I think that we could push for with the industry as well. Is water recovery, just using what's available to us and harvesting what we can. Because, you know, I mean, but like I said before, plant knowledge and choosing the correct plants for the right conditions and right space is just as important. You can get plants that will thrive on neglect, which are going to do really well over the drought period. So, there's so much we can do and can learn.
We can put in terracotta too, just before we move on. Kale and clay or something. If you've got sandy soil, there are ways to trap that moisture in the soil.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, and yeah, like you say, soil conditioning and adding, organic matter to the soil and will all help with water retention.
Totally.
So there's so much to know. There's so much to learn, Dan.
That's why you got to go to TAFE, mate.
You go to TAFE and you'll learn quite a bit. You'll learn a lot. A lot of it is outside of TAFE with experiences and speaking to other people and doing it and trial and error as well. There's a lot of different ways to learn. TAFE is a good avenue to get a lot of knowledge and get your qualification. But you're only there for 3 years, so you know, your working life's a lot longer than that, and there's plenty of time to learn. A lot of stuff needed to do what you want to do.
Well, then you got to listen to the Plants Grow Here podcast too, because you can listen to that while you're shoveling.
Exactly. Stick the earpods in and turn the app on and go for gold.
Exactly. Maybe stay off it on the machines though.
Oh, you probably should, yes. Yes. I don't know where the, I'm not too sure if there's any rules to say you cannot wear Bluetooth earmuffs and have your, have some audio playing in the background. I'm not too sure whether you can or can't do that, but if your attention is 100% attention is needed, then definitely, you don't want to be. Probably you don't want to be listening to anything that's going to take your attention away from that.
No, you don't want someone walking up to the bobcat and then you swing it round and then you're going to hit him with a bucket or something like that. Like, no, it's not good.
No, not at all. It's not what you want. It does happen though.
Yeah, I know. Mistakes happen. I mean, I'm a ride-on mower. Like, I did a lot of hours on the ride-on mower throughout the years. And, there have been circumstances where I probably shouldn't admit this, but there have been circumstances where I've used the headphones on the ride-on mower, but I've always been very careful about it and there was nothing on my swims to say I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, certainly, I wouldn't be recommending that for anyone to be on a big machine.
No, I'd say, yeah, especially and especially when there's other people around. I guess if, you know, I mean, each circumstance could be different. If you're on flat ground
and there's no one around, you know that your workmates in the front yard.
Yeah, then it's probably not so bad. But
maybe stick to when you're planting the flowers or maybe pruning the roses or something.
Yeah.
Although you guys don't prune too many roses.
Well, I gave my students a lesson on pruning roses the other day. Dan, that was one of the first... When I was 17, that was one of the first, or 18, I learned how to prune a rose at the TAFE in Hobart. And after I learned that, I was staying with my auntie down in Hobart, and she had three or five roses out the front of her place, and it was winter, and I said, okay, I'm just gonna practice what I've learned on your roses. And they were big. They were they would have been over a metre high. And I said, I'm going to get into them. So I pruned them back to about 400 mil off the ground. And, you know, you prune them into the vase shape and you have the buds pointing externally. And she was horrified. She was absolutely devastated until summer and when they went through and flowered, and she was pretty happy.
Never looked so good. I remember doing the same thing. I was working in a fairly wealthy suburb of Melbourne, and this lady had a Greek house cleaner who was there with us, and she was looking at us pruning the roses. She said, "That's not what I meant by winter prune. What are you doing?" And the Greek house lady was like, "No, no, it's beautiful. It's beautiful." Because she knew.
Yeah. There's, you know, they're pretty hardy, the old rose. You can knock them back pretty hard, but they like it. But I think it's needed as well. To maintain shape and to encourage flowering, I think they need a good cut back.
Okay, so we sort of stepped off onto maintenance there for a second, Rob.
Yes.
I'd like to ask you just a couple more questions, three more questions I've got for you. Can we start with, what are some of the most common myths relating to landscape construction careers?
Common myths.
What do people think before they start the career and then they realize, no, I was wrong?
I mean, it is hard work. It is very hard physically to start with. That's not a myth. gratification, I guess that's something that's, you know, not learnt until you experience it. There's gratification there, but that's not a myth. But there's gratification in industry that you won't know until you've actually experienced it. Having something, starting something from scratch, from a design, and you've got a blank canvas or a near blank canvas, and having an end product, there's a gratification that can bring you to tears in that, knowing that you've built it and what you've created is going to last a long time. There is a myth, I guess, that landscaping's that there's a lot of stuff that anyone can do, you know, that it's an industry that it's not up there with, you know, builders where you need, you know, specialized skills. That there's a myth that landscapers are someone you get in if you haven't got time to do it yourself. But it's not. It's a very it's a specialized and skilled field where, you know, there's a lot of training and there's a lot of regulation and there's a lot of knowledge on materials that go into it. So it's definitely not something that can be done by anyone without the training. And I mean, you've probably seen this before where people have tried stuff and themselves.
Got a story for you.
Yeah, and it's gone pear-shaped. Yeah. So I've seen it a lot.
Even just aesthetically, like, you can really tell the difference between a qualified landscaper's paving and just a home gardener's paving. Remember, we had this guy working for us at a maintenance firm once, and he was like, no, I've done construction. I can put the tiling on the driveway. He just had his driveway extended and he was just going to put some paving down. So, off you go then. It was comical. It was all zigzaggy and, you know, it didn't get better over time either. It got a lot worse over time. It was quite funny.
It is. And then when they ask you to come and fix it, you shake your head. So
let's just rip it out and start again.
It ends up costing him three times more than it would have done if they had done it in the first place. But yeah, it's definitely not like that. I mean, it's not an industry that you can just, you know, do. It's not something that the homeowner can just, you know, do and do well.
Maintenance is like that too, contrary to belief. Like, a lot of people have a crack at it, but then if you're an actual horticulturist, you'll look at it and be like, well, why did you prune that there?
That's right. And why did you put that there? you know?
Yeah, why did you put that there? Yeah.
Yeah, so...
That's a great one.
Why...
Cypress right in front of the front door. Or...
Yeah, yeah. So there is a lot of skill and a lot of knowledge that goes into... I mean, that's why you charge. That's why you get paid, because you have that skill and that knowledge. I think we're getting better. I think the industry is getting better at what we do, and getting better and you know, going down this path and getting better at what we do will sort of separate us from that DIY. Yeah, I can do that. Mm. That looks easy. So pushing limits and building stuff that looks fantastic is not something anyone can do. It takes a lot of time, a lot of knowledge, and you gotta have the skills to be able to do a job properly. I mean it's like car mechanics. I mean, you could be anyone can do car mechanics, but it's how well you do it that's the thing, you know.
I could do accounting. I could do your accounting for you if you want.
So I guess that's a bit of a myth that's been floating around. I'm not too sure, Dan, on myths. It is a special – yeah. Look, the guys coming into the industry generally have no expectations on what they're getting themselves into. But to start with, you know, it could be your first job. Straight out of school, first job, straight on the wheelbarrow, you know, pushing tons and tons of material about. And, that does turn a lot of kids away. But if, you know, generally, that's not fair. Like if an employer puts you straight on and treats you as cheap labor and puts you through your apprenticeship because it's a cheaper wage, then that's not fair. But, you know, it is hard work. There's no two ways about that. Physically demanding. But that's why you do it. You stay fit. You stay fit, you stay strong. Mm. I would say that it's an industry you cannot work on the tools forever, you know.
That's a great point.
You cannot be that physically intensive forever.
We see some people try, especially some of the older guys who are still cracking away at it. You sort of look at them and you're like, how are you still together in one piece?
Yeah, no, that's
it's not easy.
It's not a good model at all. You need to be training people. You need to be training people to do, young people to do your job. And then you need to be planning, preparing and looking after them, to making sure they're happy.
I think there is a myth there, though, around that hard work. Like, hard work doesn't stay hard as long as you're conditioning yourself. Like, the first 6 weeks of maintenance gardening were really hard for me. My hands were shaking because I was holding the heaviest brush cutter. I was brush cutting in my dreams. It's just really hard work.
Yeah,
but then after that first 6 weeks, you become conditioned to it, and what used to be hard becomes normal.
Yeah, yeah. And then that's exactly right. So, you know, you do get physically equipped. You get physically strong. It's physically demanding. It's like a workout every day. Mm. But, yeah, if you stop, then you lose it pretty quick.
Yeah, I've lost it now because I've been off the tours now.
I'm so soft.
I mean, on my hands, I can touch my wife again. For a while, I had so many calluses on my hands, she used to make me prune them all off before she'd let me touch her.
Yeah, no, it's and like I said, it's you can't live with that physical intensity. I mean, you got to be thinking, so I don't know, 40s, late 30s, maybe mid 40s, you got to be looking at sort of an exit strategy to get off the tools. If you're not off the tools by 40, then you know it's not going to get easier.
What about someone getting into it at 40 though? Is that possible, or just avoid that, do you reckon?
I don't want to deter anyone in their 40s or even 50s getting into it. But I would say learn fast. I would say learn fast, because it's not to say, like, I know so many 40 and 50 year olds that are super fit. It's going to be tough. Like it's hard on your body. Like if you're not conditioned to it, it's super hard.
And it doesn't end after 45 minutes at the gym. It just keeps going and it's going constant, and going for like 8 hours a day.
I remember we were in a situation once where we had to hand mix concrete, okay. And I had a guy, and I speak to him from time to time still, and he'll never forget it. And we had 11 ton of concrete. He had 11 ton of concrete to mix in a mixer. And he always remembers that as the 11 ton day. And he did it all. And I was a couple of pallets of cement there and 10 ton of sand mix, the sand metal mix. And he went for it and he did it. But, it's not something that you can do forever. And if you're getting into it at 40 and 50, I'd say that you'd want to be going into to gain as much knowledge as you can. Do a lot of reading, a lot of research as well, because your knowledge is going to be your biggest asset, because any employer that's employing someone at sort of 50 to be on a wheelbarrow knows that's not going to last for too long.
But there's an initiation element to it as well. Like some ways, like you to be one of the guys or to be one of the crew, you've got to be able to do what the rest of the crew does.
That's right. That's right. And the guy handing out those orders needs to be able to do it as well. But yeah. I think you are right. I think you've really got to go through the hard yards to have that experience and have that, you know, to know how it feels, I guess. So when you are in a position of putting someone in that situation where they do have to do that 10 ton of concrete, then you know that it's not something you haven't done, but it's something that can be done. Mm. But like I said before, it's if you're expecting someone to do that day in, day out, they're not going to hang around for too long. Mm. They're going to smart up to that pretty quick and say, well, I'm not doing this. That's ridiculous. But, yeah, look, like I said, I've got guys in their 40s and 50s that have come through TAFE. They themselves are well aware that it's physically demanding. These guys often want to get their landscape certificate and then specialize in something, whether they go down the Hort line or design line or consultancy, but maybe not consultancy, but you know, they want to specialize a bit. There's age limits to what you can do, I guess, and especially for the amount of time you can do some stuff, but definitely not ruling out mature aged. I'm going to say mature age, I'm not going to say old. I'm in that mid-40s category myself, so I prefer mature aged. But I would say that mature age, there's definitely space and definitely spots that can be filled by mature age guys and girls. So,
and it is a bit harsh to call someone who's 45 mature as well, because they're only halfway through. You've still got as much time that you've had ahead of you, hopefully.
You know, my kids often tell me, they said, Dad, you're halfway through your life. And that's a sobering thought, but I don't like hearing it.
Apologies.
But, you know, there's still, I mean, you've still got a lot of life left in you. Yeah, you probably, I mean, 100%. 40s are great. You can do a lot in your 40s, but what you do do better in your 40s is use your head than your body. So
with all your experience.
Yeah, with knowledge. You do, you still have that passion to learn. You know, you've got life experience. You've got a lot of stuff young kids don't have, and that's time. You know, you've got a lot of life experience. You've seen a lot. So you can bring portions of that to a company and to an employer. Not all of it. Some of it might be very, very handy. You know, you might be. I had someone start TAFE in their 30s that were. They were an admin for a car company, Mazda, I think it was. And came over, but she wanted to get into it. She wanted to do a landscape certificate and then go down the design role, the line. Purely wanted to get landscape construction certificate to have that background knowledge. But unfortunately, she wasn't working in the industry and found it hard to maintain or to have the skills needed to keep up. So I think she went away and she was going to get some more work under her belt before she came back. But, it doesn't rule out, anyone. But, I'd say the older you are or the more mature you are, the less physical, resilience you have, bouncing back after 3 days of pushing mulch or on your knees screeding a sand bed or screeding concrete. You know, you can't back up after a couple of days of that. When you I can't now, but you know, it's something you need to consider if you are going into the industry at a later stage. Look at using what you know, research, study, and specialize in something that's valuable to the industry, plants or soils, irrigation, you know, specialize into something and be an expert in that, rather than just going in. I mean, companies can employ apprentices at any age. But I'd say if you were going in your 50s and as a first-year apprentice and pushing a wheelbarrow, I'd say that would be a daunting. I would think that would be quite daunting.
And do you think it's more like physically intense than, say, like other areas within horticulture, like arboriculture and turf?
No, probably. I mean, the arb guys, they climb a lot. So I think that's quite physically demanding. And the turf guys are pushing machines around a lot. I guess it could be. I mean, depending on what you're doing. Concrete,
that's heavy stuff.
Concrete, pebbles. Bricks and blocks and retaining walls. If you're doing like a concrete sleeper, I mean, you need a machine to lift them. If you're doing them by hand, it's hard yakka.
Oh, yeah. Everyone wants to get on the mulch, don't they? Everyone wants the mulch duties.
The light stuff, yeah. No. But that's the end of the job. That's the good part of the job.
Right.
So the mulching. But
yeah, that's the fun part. I've had a few jobs where it's shoveling the pebbles first and then shoveling mulch. And you cannot believe that you ever struggled shoveling mulch in the past after you've done pebbles.
No. Pebbles are terrible. By all means, if you're in a corporate world and you want something completely different and you have a passion for horticulture, then I'd say definitely go for it. go for it and see how far you can get. But if you're just looking for a job and landscaping pops up and there's a spot for a first year apprentice and you take it, just have a good look at the job description before you sign the line.
It's a lifestyle, not just a job. What a great note to end it on, Rob.
It definitely, yes. So it is such a gratifying, for all its hard work and its pain, it is such a gratifying industry to be in. And look, I'll always be involved in it, whether it's through teaching or consulting or landscape design, or, you know, if I move from the Illawarra here and move somewhere else and I decide I want to start up another business, then I can do that. And I think it's but having something and building something that you can see, you know, it's not like plumbing where it's buried behind plaster, or, you know, you can look at a toilet and say, shit, I did a good job there. it's something that's it changes the way people live. What you're building is changing the way people live and the environment that they live in. And
that's right.
Enhancing that is something that's something to be proud of. And, you know, the gratification is huge. And I don't think, you know, there's only so many trades where you can actually have that gratification.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for a great chat, Rob. Appreciate your time, mate.
No worries, Dan. Thanks very much.
Check the show notes to learn more about studying landscape construction at TAFE New South Wales. You'll also find a link to hortpeople.com where you can upload your resume for free so that employers can chase you to offer you a job. Tick the landscape construction category, and if you're new to the industry, you can also tick new to the industry to attract employers who are looking for people without any experience or qualifications. Remember to subscribe to the Plants Grow Here podcast on your favourite listening platform, share this episode with a friend, and connect with me on Twitter @PlantsGrowHere or on LinkedIn, where you can find me under my own personal name.